We all know how valuable photos and video clips of a loved one are. But have you thought about capturing their full story in their own words as an audio podcast or as a video? At GK Media, we've been working with families, hospices, and nursing homes across Ireland over the past 10 years to help preserve precious memories. We help you celebrate the voices, special moments, and wisdom of your loved ones by recording your meaningful conversations together. Record in our Galway studio, or we can travel to you bringing our own recording equipment. Whether it's a tribute, life story, or message for future generations, we capture it with care and compassion. Visit gkmedia.ie/legacy and let us help you tell the story that deserves to be remembered.
There are very few places in the world where you don't have to explain your grief, where no one expects you to smile or pretend. This is one of those rare places, a quiet, grounded day where you can simply show up exactly as you are. On Sunday, October 19th, we'll gather for the Grief Workshop at Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney, Dublin, a peaceful place by the sea, created for anyone carrying grief. Throughout the day, you'll be gently supported by expert facilitators, people who understand grief and who offer real tools to help. Through movement, breath, journaling and stillness, you'll be guided back to yourself in quiet, compassionate ways. And you'll be in a room with others who get it. There's something powerful about sitting with people who don't need you to explain anything because they've felt it too. The setting is calm and beautiful, a soft place to land, to breathe, and to take time for yourself, time that's so rarely available in everyday life. By the end of the day, strangers may not feel like strangers, because when grief meets grief, something shifts. Some people leave with lifelong friends. Others leave with something softer inside. And maybe just as importantly, you'll have spent time remembering your person, honouring them quietly, without distraction, without apology, because they deserve space too. Early bird tickets are now available at griefireland.com. Spaces are limited, and if it feels right for you, I'd love to welcome you. Okay, so welcome back. We are back today with the lovely Orla Clancy. How are you, Orla?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
And this is not our first time talking.
No.
Orla and I did a live back in the good old days when I first set up the Grief Ireland page.
Yeah.
I used to do lives, and it was such a nice time, actually, when I think about it, because it was lockdown. Everybody was doing stuff from home. And that's when I created this whole community. Mm-hmm. And it's really how, you know, you're probably a large part of why I'm sitting here today, because that's what grew the page, actually, is doing those lives.
They were brilliant.
Yeah. So people come on and shared their story of loss, and it was brilliant for people sitting at home, especially if they had lost someone during COVID, you know?
Yeah, they were really helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much. And then we met on one of the retreats.
I know. Had a great weekend.
What a weird way to describe a grief retreat. A great weekend. But it was. Yeah, we had a lovely
time.
You
have to be there to understand it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Otherwise it sounds strange.
But it's so good to see you again, and you've come up from County Clare today, and you're going to speak to me all about, I suppose, your own story and your own experience of grief and loss. So as always, what I always do is let's go back to the start. So you're from where exactly?
I'm from West Clare, a little place called Moveen, just outside Kilkee.
Oh, lovely.
So I grew up there, me, my mum, my dad, my brother and sister, and really nice childhood. I was the baby, so they always looked after me. But there was a bit of a gap between us.
Was there?
So, yeah, they'll probably kill me now. I think there's 11 between me and my brother, and then 9 between me and my sister.
Okay, so you're a real baba.
Yeah. So I was the big gap. Oh, yeah. which meant I ended up, when they went to school, ended up spending a lot of time with mom at home.
Okay.
And yeah, we just had a really like simple, nice childhood. I think I was saying before, like, you know, obviously arguments and all that because in the 90s and money, but I just remember having a really like always feeling really safe and loved and happy. I think I was just, I was so young and small. I was like, well, I didn't know what was going on around me. Or my dad was Noel.
Yeah.
And he was a creamery manager. So knew all the farmers back West Clare. And they're actually, they both came from the same village.
Okay.
Mam's name is Christina. So they both came from the same village. So both of my families are like, they all grew up together, so they're all friends and interconnected. So
right.
I think that was a huge thing as well for me, because all sides of my extended family were really close and
lovely.
They were actually really friendly. So I kind of felt like the 45 cousins, we all like knew each other, even, you know, even not all of us did or whatever. So they met in Mullock, they grew up together, and then dad got a job back in West Clare, so they moved back there, and that's how we ended up back there. But like, I always say my second home is Mullock, which is where they came from, and I have a real draw to there, and I think a lot of us do, just because it's where we spent our childhoods and stuff. And
lovely.
It was just really happy. I make it sound like there was loads of stuff going on. There wasn't. It was just, you know, when you were such a little kid, and I'm sure there was dramas with school or whatever, but I just never...
Yeah, the normal stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think as well, because my brother and sister were older, I was their little baby as well. So I was always very well looked after and minded and very protected.
Did you find that, side note, like lonely in any way? Probably not when you've loads of cousins, but like with that big age gap, you're siblings, would it be a whole different, you know what I mean, in terms of someone playing with you when you were younger?
Probably. But then like I was so close to Mammy that like she would play dolls with me, like they did as well. I don't really remember it as much, but I see from pictures. But like I'm really close with my sister, and my brother would always be off farming, but he'd always dote on me, but a bit. But then that kind of grew myself and Mammy's relationship so close to a point where I cried my whole first day in school, probably into the whole first year of school, because even though I knew she was just back the road or in town, I was so attached to her that I hated being without her. Like it was quite bad. Like I remember we were at a family, you know, like an anniversary mass or whatever. She was in the same room, but obviously off doing her thing and floating like a butterfly. And I was like, I want my mom. Like,
so
it got
maybe
to
getting them out the door is no, I'm asking this for my own.
Yeah.
My own head.
Yeah.
Because there's a gap of, you know, 6 years between my two. And I'm like, he was, you know, so close to me.
I know.
But then
yeah.
I used to feel like, is he lonely because he didn't have anyone to play with?
I never felt lonely.
Yeah. Okay.
And like my neighbour is next
door. But like that,
well.
He cried the whole first week in school.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, that was a bit, that was tough. I still think about that and get slagged over it. But
so you were so close to your mom, obviously growing up, and your dad. And then as you turn in, I suppose, towards your teenage years, can you tell me all about what was happening then?
So when I, before, there was kind of a weird lead up to it. We joke in our family that death was very around us all the time, just with like grandparents and, you know, granduncles and aunts. As I said, we're very close. So I remember being at funerals at 5 and 6, and that wasn't strange to me.
Yeah.
And my uncle got very sick. And again, he was a bachelor, so we all took that quite hard, especially my mam. And he passed away. And do you know when you have somebody like that in the family, it's a real like devastation. Like it still is now. We get really lonely talking about it. And my nana had passed away. So I always felt that he was a bachelor, so all of them really looked after him. And we would go up every Sunday to him. And I felt like there was just something, not missing, but she was so heartbroken, Mammy, after Michael passed away. She was never really the same again. She was still herself, but there was a piece of her gone.
Yeah.
And so she broke her leg when I was in second year. And that was fine. Everything was grand. And then I went down to my brother and sister in Cork. They both lived down there for a weekend. It was like before Christmas. And we had a great time. But I have this, I'm told like I have, you know, like intuitions or whatever, just by different people I speak to. And as much as I had a great time, I was just really looking forward to getting home. And I was like, I just want to go home, and I want to go home to mom and dad, and I really want to see mammy and show her all the shopping that I got and show her my outfit for Christmas. So got home on the Sunday. and they collected me, and that was grand. And I remember the next day going to school, you know, going into Christmas week, and I was like, yes, we're nearly finished, all the decorations are up, this is going to be amazing, like Marie and Brian will be back up again next weekend, we'll all have a great Christmas together. And on the Monday, we had, you know, done a few bits or whatever, neighbours had called, and we're not a family that say I love you. We are now, like me and my sister do, or but we never did. And I just felt like this real, oh God, I just love her so much, and I'm so glad I'm home. And I went to bed and I was like, do you know what, I'm just going to go downstairs and just tell her I love her, I'm just going to do it. And I went downstairs, and at the time, because she'd broken her leg, now her cast was off, and that's important for later, but she was still sleeping downstairs. So I went downstairs, the sitting room she was in was above my bedroom. I just went in and I was like, no, ma'am. And I was like, okay, I love you. And she's like, I love you too. And I was like, oh my God. And then I bounced upstairs and I was like, that was so lovely. And I was like, this is going to be a class week at school. And then she came upstairs to say goodnight to my dad, and she was like doing whatever, clothes or whatever. And I was trying to go to sleep. I was listening to music, and then I heard a noise. And because it was directly below me, I was like, oh no, maybe she banged her leg off the radiator or something. And then I heard it again, and I was like, no. And then I heard it a third time. And on the third time, I knew there was something wrong. So I went downstairs and opened the door, and I was like, mammy, you okay? And the lights were off, and I was like, she's going to kill me now if I turn on the light. So obviously I had to turn on the light, and she had already, well, she was passing away. But I didn't think that, because that's not what you know, you can't really go to that place straight away. I haven't talked about this in a while, so if I get a bit sad. So I ran upstairs to get my dad. And again, like, I know now, because it's happened since, I know she was passing away then. But at the time, I was like, we need to get somebody here immediately.
What did you think in your head then, in that moment? What was happening? You just didn't know?
I thought maybe like she was having a heart attack, and my dad had previously had a heart attack and a quadruple bypass, like when I was younger. Mm. So I was like, he'll know. And our neighbour was a nurse, and we always rang her for anything. If I thought I broke my elbow or you bust your head open, that's who you rang. And I never thought it was so serious you'd have to call an ambulance. And for years afterwards, I was like, oh my God, is this my fault? Like, if I had acted quicker, would something have happened? I know now with what happened, it wouldn't have. But so I called him, he ran downstairs, and he was trying to, because he had done football and stuff before, you know, trying to turn her over and everything.
Is she unresponsive at this point?
Yeah. So we eventually got through to I rang my neighbour, because I couldn't think of any numbers. So I rang our next door neighbours, and they were like, what's wrong? And I was like, just get me that Evan number. I was 13. I shouldn't be cursing at my neighbours. And anyway, long story short, they knew there was something up. My other neighbour had come down, and she was a trained nurse. So she, you know, was like, we're like, go outside now, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And eventually they rang the ambulance. And this, like, I remember as all this was happening, I was like, right, I need to go up and get dressed. We'll be going to the hospital, wear something warm, take off your pajamas, just get something cozy on, because you're going to the hospital and you could be there for a while. So I was doing that. And eventually the ambulance came, and my neighbours next door saw the lights. Like, we live in the country, but they had obviously stayed up. So then they arrived over, and then word must have like filtered out, I don't know. But next thing there was, like, I don't remember it exactly as it happened, but I just remember suddenly there was loads of people in our house. But the paramedics had called me in, and they had said, look, something happened to your mammy, and you'll have to say goodbye to her now. And I was like, well, what? Because you, like, I thought they were there to fix it and take her away, and then they're telling you that she's not there anymore. And me and my dad went into the sitting room, and I just kept screaming, because I was like, well, if I scream at her, she'll wake up. But obviously that didn't happen. And then I think it was after that, everyone was in the house, and like, family had started coming, and I was like, what the hell is going on? Like, I knew what had happened, but it's, I think when you're I was 13, but when I look back now, I was so little. Like, I know that's a teenager, but it was such a shock. And it was really like, everything was very dramatic. Like, there was lights outside and paramedics everywhere. And, you know, you always think when there's medical staff, well, they'll fix it, but they couldn't. So then I just remember being like, oh my God, what about Marie and Brian? Because it was in the middle of the night and I was like, who's going to tell them, or like, who's going to go down to them or whatever? So we organised that our aunt and uncle, who would be very close to them, told them. So they had to be brought up from Cork. And I was like, they need to get here, because, and everyone, like, when I look back, everyone was so good. Like, I remember, I'm pretty sure it was the nurse who came down. She said, get into bed with your mommy now, like, while she was still warm. And I was like, why are you telling me to do this? And I remember being like, but she is warm. Like, you must have this wrong. Like, how is she gone? And I was like, why are you all, like, I was like, you weirdo. I was like, why are you all in the house, like, looking at us? Like, it was just so surreal. And I think for so long, I never spoke about any of that. And I didn't think I should, or I could, or I didn't think it was appropriate. But actually, like, that's probably the stuff people should know, because there's certain things that, like, I don't like getting frights now, or like a sudden noise. And, you know, I say to people, like, could you please just not do that? Because I'm not going to go into it, but it is important that certain people know that, like, please don't ever make a sudden noise, or because it does, it triggers things. And mm-hmm. I think just for so long, I didn't talk about it or didn't think about it. It actually probably not did more damage, but I know I spoke to you before about, like, back then there was no child therapy, there was no play therapy, it just wasn't a thing. So you kind of were just dealing with it as it came. So that happened. The lads came home, and it was just, honestly, it was the nicest couple of days, but the worst couple of days that I think I've ever put down, apart from what happened later on.
So you were 13 at the time?
Yeah.
Just a quick interruption from myself here, the host, Kathy. Myself and Orla had a chat after we recorded this podcast, and we both realised that neither of us had mentioned or asked what had happened to her mom. And so we felt it was really important to give context to you guys as to what actually happened. And so her mom, Christina, sadly passed away from SADS, which is sudden adult death syndrome.
I think I took it really bad when I look back, like, at the funeral. I probably shouldn't have been doing anything at the funeral because I just wasn't able, but I wanted to because it was my mom. And I think a lot of people were probably, like, don't get me wrong, like, mammy adored my brother and sister, and same. But I think because I was so young, they were like, what are we going to do with this one? Because you're a teenager going into a very strange time in your life. And
versus they're in their 20s, like.
Yeah. And I think, you know what, like, looking back, I felt so sorry for Dad, because he did raise Marie and Brian, but, like, you know, he was home in the evening. Like, he had to take control now of this one person who's 13 and, you know, bring her up through the teenage years, which, like, looking back now, and, you know, we had fights and all that kind of stuff. I felt so, now as an adult, like, I'm so proud of him and, like, happy that we did it together, but, like, it must have been so hard on him, you know?
And when you think about after your mum was gone, then what age was she?
51.
So young.
Yeah. So it was the 15th of December, and she was 51, and she was going to be 52 on the 28th. So it, like, she was gone way too soon.
Yeah, for sure.
You know.
But when you think about just the aftermath of that, I don't know, I just sometimes visualize, we all get the funerals, we know what they are. It's just a circus, really, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
But after that, when you come home and the sadness and the loneliness, and your dad has lost the love of his life, and your sister and your brother are all grieving as well. Mm-hmm. What's it like as a 13-year-old to be grieving? Did you understand what it was? Or do you know what I mean?
No, because, like, I remember, like, since being an adult and losing people, there's, like, a grace period and everything. But I just think it was a very different time back then. And as well, I was the only person I knew who had lost a parent. And it was like, we have a small community. Everybody knew. Everyone knew, like, if you went into a shop and whatever, and people were so good. But it's like, do you know? And it was like, everybody knows. You couldn't get away from it. And not that you wanted to, but I remember, so it was Christmas time, which is hard enough anyway, and then going back to school. Like, I remember my brother ringing and being like, how'd she get on? Is she okay? And Dad was like, well, she actually, I only went in for a half day the first day because I was like, I just don't want to be here. And he was like, why? Like, is she okay? What's wrong with her? And he was like, no, she's fine. She just had a hard day. And then I remember my friend saying, don't try for the half day tomorrow. Just go in for the full day because you're going to have to do it eventually. And I did. And that was kind of it. Like, I went back to, back to business, back to normality. And my friends as well, when I think about it, were also 13, 14. Like, what are they supposed to say to me? Yeah. And like, you also, you know, obviously I don't think this now, but you don't want to be the one like, yeah, my mom died and I'm really sad. Like, you don't want to, it's a really strange time. And especially 20 years ago, like, what do you do?
So you just obviously didn't speak about it at all.
No.
To no, no one.
No.
And what was it like coming home from school to no mom there?
Well, my dad had to go back to work. And so I would come home and light the fire and get like stuff, which I knew what to do because mammy would have been doing it. But so that was in from January. And I could be wrong because it's all such a blur those years. But that dad only, he stopped working. He took early retirement, I think that summer, because he was like, no, this is not, it's not right, it's not fair. Like, you know, I was going to be doing my junior cert the next year.
When you think about it, he was probably struggling himself.
Oh my God, yeah. Like, I don't...
It's not something he probably would have discussed with you then, though.
No, not at all. Yeah. And, like, I'm now married and don't have kids, but I think back on... Because you're only in your own grief. You know, and when it's so raw and traumatic and everything, you don't think about the other people in your life. And I do think now as an adult, how did he do that? And like, he went to work, he made sure everything was okay for me and my brother and sister. Like, I don't know how he did it. Mm. Now, like, God forbid anything happened my husband, I don't know what I would do. And he just kept going. And there was some really hard years there. Like, we would argue, and because we just didn't understand each other. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't trade them for anything, because, you know, like, my brother and sister were amazing. Like, they came home, like, whenever they could, they would always be there. They'd be there for dinners. Like, they were amazing. But they also had to go back to college and work. It was during the week that, like, yeah, we'd row and fight or whatever, because I was a teenager and you don't understand me. And I lost my mom. And he's like, well, I lost my wife. And, but if, it made us grow so close together, and I understood him in a way I never would have if it wasn't for that happening. And I think same for him with me, because also there was a big age difference between me and my dad. He was from a totally different generation. I, you know, ended up loving traveling and like was a bit of a fairy. So he was just like, oh my God. But he he also understood me so well from living with me for that long. And he also, he would have been a bit highly strung, and he just mellowed so much throughout the years. Like, I remember I'm pretty sure it was my aunt-in-law, she had mentioned it to me. She's like, Jesus, no, let's calm down, an awful lot since living with you. And I was like, well, he didn't really have a choice, do you know? And like, neither did I. And, but it was a really hard few years and stuff that, like, not that I've blocked it out, but it was just so mad. It was just such a mad time. I don't remember half of it. I mean, I do, but it was so mental to try and go through that as a kid.
As you grew a bit older then, did you rebel, or, you know, did you find yourself, let's say when you turned 18 or even that, with the starting to, I suppose, understand
what happened?
Yes. Did that?
I never really rebelled, but I definitely made some questionable decisions.
I mean, who doesn't?
I know, right? I think just because I just never talked about it. It was just never, it just was never really anything I wanted to talk about. I feel as well, now I'm talking about this on a podcast, I never, only people close to me knew what happened that night. And I don't know why I was so, I don't know if I was like protective of that moment or it was just so personal, but I'm like, actually, that's what happened. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. And I think sometimes you do need to understand parts of people's life like that, parts of people's life like that, to understand why they are the way they are. So I did start to like share more with people, but not when, only as I went to lots of counselling. Mm-hmm. I was like, it's okay to talk about this. But I did make like, I was always afraid of people leaving. And like, just not really knowing my worth, I suppose, until I actually went to therapy. And I went to one therapy set. I was in Abu Dhabi and I was like, enough is enough. And at the time, mental health wouldn't have been, it just wouldn't, it would have been a bit taboo there. So you couldn't really get counsellors. But I seeked one out and got one. And in my first session, in 1 hour, so much was just made clear. And I was like, why did I not just do this sooner? And, you know, I went to a good few after that or whatever, but that one session like changed my whole outlook on the past 15 years or whatever it was of my life. Because she didn't know me. She didn't know my family. She didn't know my situation. I told her very factual stuff and like, it was amazing. And that really helped. But I would get really panicked and, you know, like just, I think though as well, like that night was so, I don't want to use the word traumatic because it's such a big word, but it really was so traumatic that like, even like talk about it now, 22 years later nearly, it's still really upsetting because, you know, I like sometimes I look at that girl as like a different person and I'm like, I just want to hug her and I'm like, oh my God, you poor little kid. But I'm like, but Orla, you, that happened to you. And I think sometimes, no, I don't do it intentionally, but like I separate it because, well, obviously it's not healthy to keep going back there either. But sometimes you do have to understand where you are now. But it is really hard. And as well, back then, nobody I knew had lost anyone that close to them. Unfortunately, now I have friends who have lost moms or dads or both. Like I have one or two friends and I hate that. I hate that we have that in common. But there are people I can relate to. Back then there was nobody, like no one. And I remember even dad saying one time, well, I lost my mom and dad. And I was like, dad, you're an adult. Like I'm a child. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not the same thing. Whereas unfortunately now, I don't know if it's because people do talk about it more, people can relate to each other more, or just back then, was there nobody who that had really happened to, just in our circle of family and friends?
We didn't have the internet really, and we didn't get to listen to a podcast like this. True. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that's, we're becoming so much more aware of things. Taboos are lifting because you're seeing it being spoke about, all sorts of different subjects.
Yeah.
And it, back then it was a very lonely and isolating place, but it caused a lot of damage to people.
So much damage.
You know?
Yeah.
That's why we're all in therapy. So did you struggle I suppose as a result of that, did you find that later on it came out and that was the reason why you were struggling or anything like that?
I think it came out more so of like, now I would still struggle a lot with change, any kind of change, and I have to really gear myself up to anything, or losing people.
So after that, I suppose you and your dad were so close then.
Yeah.
And your dad's health was okay as you were growing older when it was just the two of you?
Yeah, no, it was fine. Like he had his heart issues, but that was nearly a good thing because he kept going for his checkups and everything. He also, when my uncle was sick, just before my mom passed away, all of his skin fell off. It was a certain condition. I can't remember the name of it. There was only like two in the country that had it. So we always had to be very careful with his skin because it was very thin.
Wow.
But he was good. Like he was doing really well. And I moved to England and taught there for 2 years. And then A lot of my cousins had gone to Abu Dhabi, and I was like, actually, I think that's what I want to do. So I went over, and he was delighted. Like, he was like, spread your wings. And he'd like, I traveled so much, and he'd be telling people like, guess where she is today? And oh, this lady went to Egypt for 24 hours and blah, blah, like really proud.
Oh, so cute, isn't
it? Yeah, like so sweet for somebody who never got on a plane. And then, so in 2018, the summer, I was getting ready to come home, and I got a, I think Marie rang me, which in Abu Dhabi, like you couldn't ring on WhatsApp. And I was like, why is she, did she ring or text? I think she rang, and she said, something's after happening to Dad. Don't worry. He's okay. He's going to the hospital. And I was like, what? I was like, what do you mean? And she, anyway, it turns out he got a really bad pain and was driving to the hospital, or driving to the doctor, and he had to pull over. Long story short, he got to the doctor in our town, and he was like 20 minutes from a burst aneurysm. So they had to call a helicopter, and he was taken away and all that. So I was going to fly home, and Dad was like, don't be ridiculous. You'll be home in a couple of weeks and I'm fine. And he was. He was fine. We were just a bit mindful of him after that, because we were like, oof, Dad is getting a bit older, and that really should have killed him, because that runs in our family. And we're like, he's the, everyone calls him the cat with nine lives or whatever. And we're like, another one. So I was kind of mindful of him. And then I was like, what'll I do? Like, because I was thinking about moving to Vietnam then. And I was like, will I, won't I? Will I just move home? And then, so that was 18. And then I met my now husband in kind of the December, January. Dad's health was getting better. And me and my now husband were like starting a lovely relationship. And I was like, oh my God, he's so nice. And I was like, is this for real? And it was. And just as we kind of made things official and things were going really well, like he was going to come over for the summer. Dad was doing a lot better. My nephew had been born, and that just gave my dad so much life. Like everything was just so good. And I remember thinking, what's going to happen? This is too good to be true. I was like, nothing ever falls into place like this. And I remember being like, stop it. That is such a bad way to think. And I was like, you're nearly welcoming something in.
Mm.
Lo and behold, I was home over for my birthday in April, and he lost a lot of weight. And we were like, oof. And he was a little bit weak. And we're like, oh, well, you know, he did a big operation last year. And then we decided that he should go for tests. So I flew back over, and I'd been out for dinner. He was going for tests, I think, like on a Thursday. And I'd gone out for dinner with Rohan, and I heard nothing. And I was like, that's really strange. I was like, Marie, like, what's going on? Because she had taken him. And then I was texting Dad, and I was like, Dad, like, what's up? And he used to send me voice notes, and he sent me one, and he sounded really upset. And I was like, that's really weird. And he said, I'll ring you tomorrow. Okay, I'll ring you tomorrow. And I was like, okay. So woke up the next morning, and I said to Rowan, I was like, I think there's something wrong. And he was like, don't be silly, just ring him and see. And as I was going into my apartment, my phone rang, and it was really early in Ireland, and like not so early in Abu Dhabi. And he's like, well, how are you? And I said, grand, like what happened yesterday? Like you were in there for ages with all the tests, like what's going on? And he was like, is there anyone there with you? And I said, yeah, Rowan's in the bedroom. And he said, okay, well, they found a touch of cancer. And I was like, what? And he was sitting there, and he was trying so hard not to get upset. And I was like, what? And then I started to cry, and he was like, well, please don't do that now. Please don't get upset, because I won't be able to deal with that. And I said, well, what do you mean they found a touch of cancer? Because everything was humor with him. And he said, well, they found some in my stomach and a little bit in my liver, but don't worry about it. It'd be grand, it'd be fine. And I knew that wasn't good. And I was like, why would it be in two different places? And I panicked. And I was like, I'm coming home. And he was like, don't be ridiculous. He used too much flowery. He was like, don't be ridiculous. Because I was flying home the following weekend for one of my friend's weddings. And he was like, will you stop? It's Ava's wedding next weekend. She'll be home anyway. Come see me then. He said, Orla, I'll be fine. And I was like, are you sure? Like, what did the doctor say? And he said, oh, no, this is just the start of it. We'll have to, you know, look at chemo and operations, and hopefully they'll be able to cut a bit of it out and give it to the cat. And I was like, Dad, this is not a time to joke. And he was like, well, look, we'll have to joke about it until we know more. So he was really like humorous and everything. So I came home for my friend's wedding and he had just completely deteriorated. Like he was so weak.
Wow.
He could walk around and stuff, but you could tell he was sick. In him. Yeah, huge difference. And then I was coming home for the summer, but basically in the UAE, there's like a week beforehand or two where the kids just don't come in. And I had to go to the principal of the school and it's very like not back then, but they don't tend to give you time off or whatever. And I said, I really need to go home and spend as much time with my dad to help out at home. So they let me go home and that was fine. And then Rohan was coming over that summer. So basically by whatever, May, June, when I saw him first, when I got home during the summer, it was like, I knew there was something really wrong. He was like, he hadn't lost his hair, but he nearly had. He was really sick. He couldn't really walk. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And, you know, we were in Galway Clinic the whole time. We basically spent the whole summer between Galway Clinic and then going up and down to home, which I would do it again and again and again. And I know my sister would, my brother was there as well. Marie like basically took, like she stopped working and she was his full-time carer. And then I came home and helped during the summer. But I was like, I'm not doing this. Like, you know, my brother had a family. Marie was married in Meath and I was like, this isn't fair. And I was like, that's my dad. So we kind of agreed that I would go back over, kind of hand in my notice, pack up my apartment and come home. So we kind of had, we had a lovely summer with him, but he was quite sick. And I remember, like they say, you should never Google anything. And I did. And I knew stage four then wasn't great, but he wasn't saying anything. The doctor wasn't really saying anything. And I was like, I need to know how much time is here because I'm not going to be over in the UAE when my dad's here. So he had a really tough summer. We all did, like, you know, but you just do it and you look after him. And like, I used to sleep in his bedroom with him and he'd be up all night, like listening to music. And or are you listening to this joke now? And I'm like, Dad, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, please, like you need your rest. And he's like, will you go to sleep there? And I was like, I can't sleep because I know you're not resting. So I spent the summer basically sleeping on his floor with him or whatever, and we'd go up and down to hospital. And then so I flew back over and I'd always planned to come home kind of, you know, start of October, like just get everything cleared up. And when I was there, I couldn't focus. Like I say my sister's head was wrecked because she was doing everything at home. And then I was like, what's happening now? Did he take his meds today? How's he eating? Blah, blah. And I was like, why are you here? Like, why are you here? There's no point in me being here. So I had actually changed my flights to come home early and surprise him. And then my sister rang and she said, look, I think you might have to come home a bit earlier. And I was like, but I'm coming home on whatever, Friday. And she was like, well, Orla, like the doctors have spoken to us. And I think if you want to spend some time with him. But like, I was coming home to mind him. So I didn't realize we were like at the end of it. So I think none of us really wanted to ask. And he wasn't asking. So, but I always wanted, like, I asked the oncologist before we left and Dad left the room and I was like, look, I'm going back to the UAE, but do I need to come home? And he was like, I'd say come home, but I mean to spend time with him and to look after him because, you know, wouldn't you like to be here with him? And I said, yeah, of course, but like time, like are we talking like a year? Like how? And he couldn't say, but I didn't think it was going to be that short. So I had to leave, and even that was dramatic, leaving the UAE, because I texted and said, look, my dad's terminal, I have to go home. And I was told I couldn't, and I was like, well, fuck you, I'm going.
Yeah.
Like, you're not going to stop me from getting on a plane going home to my dad. So in fairness, like, I packed a bag, left for the airport, and like he rang me and I think he was kind of saying like, well, when did you say you're coming home again? And I said, Dad, it's okay, I know, like I'm on a flight tomorrow. And you know, that's the first time we ever talked about him not being here anymore. And so I left, and like my friends and Rohan were so good. They packed up all my stuff, and you know, like everyone was so amazing. So got home, and we got like a couple of days with him. He moved to hospice, and I went into Galway Clinic, and I was like, "You can make," as my dad would say, "you can make your own arrangements, but the couch is mine for the next few days." I was like, they were like, "No, no, you can stay," and I said, "I'm not leaving." So I ended up staying in the hospital. They actually brought me in a bed, and I said, "No need, it's fine. I'll be in with him, or I'll be on the couch." So I stayed with him in Galway Clinic for those couple of days. And
so when you got home, he was in the hospital.
He was still in the hospital, but we wanted him transferred to hospice because, as you know, like hospice is just a totally different. My biggest, and it can't even be a regret, but I wish he was in the hospice sooner. Because there's a different kind of care. Like, he was doted on there and he didn't even get to fully experience it. And I know he would have loved it. And there was a couple of things, I know you've spoken about it before, and I spoke to the oncologist. There was a couple of things that had happened that I'm still livid over in the hospital. And I think the hardest thing for me was he kind of stayed strong for all of us, because I was there getting really upset and you turn around and see him joking and laughing and, you know, and I'm like, well, how dare I? Like, look at him and what he's doing. And he can't even get up off the chair without help, but he's like, I'll be getting my chemo. So I was like, how dare you? Or that'd be, you know, so whatever. But when I went into the hospital, it was the first time I had seen him kind of, he didn't give in to it, but he was like, it's happening. And we just, everyone kind of left us and we just cried and cried and cried. And I just said, like, Dad, what am I going to do without you? And he's just, I said, will you just please promise that you're going to stay with me? And he said, I promise. And then we had like loads of different time. Like he was so, even then, like, he was so funny because I stayed with him that first night. He was like, right, get out a pen and paper. And he said he had done this with my sister, but she had so much, like, she was dealing with all the medical, she dealt with so much, like, every, you know, he was like, just want to make sure there's a backup. So we sat and planned his funeral. And even when we were doing that, I was like, Dad, you can't say that. And he was like, excuse me, this is my funeral. I'll have it the way I want. And I was like, oh, Jesus. Wow. And he was like, now, who's, I want Brian involved. Because Brian is very, you know, not, he's very, not quiet, but he wouldn't be. He was like, I want Brian involved in this as well. And he was like, and Marie will do something. He wanted his brothers involved. And he was like, now, who's going to do the eulogy at the end? Marie can't, she'll cry. Who's going, will you do it? And I was like, do you want me to? And he was like, I don't want any nonsense above there now and any crying or any, you know, blubbering and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, I'll do it then if you want to. And he said, grand, sorted so. And he said what priest he wanted and everything. And I was like, well, if this is what I can give to you, and you'll have everything as you want it, then what a pleasure to be able to do that. And I remember, like, when he did pass, my uncle was like, guys, we need to ring this. And I said, it's all sorted, don't worry. And he was like,
I can't believe he was able to do that. Because we talk about that all the time, don't we, as well, about, you know, people just not being able to talk about it or go there.
No.
Like, well, I can't ever imagine a day where I would sit myself and say, now at my funeral, do this, do that.
I know.
We only do it in joking and in passing, but it probably makes it so much easier for people.
Yeah, because then you have an idea.
So you sat with them, obviously, and did all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you got them to the hospice.
Yeah, they got like a bed available. So we got him down. He actually wanted to just go home.
Okay.
Because my brother had like kind of done up the yard for him and planted trees and he really wanted to see it. And we were like, please, can we not just bring him home? Because he loved home.
Yeah.
All he ever wanted was to be at home. And they kind of said, look, the journey down on that road. And he was like, we wouldn't have the care. And we're like, you know what, whatever you think is best. We got him to hospice. He was even joking in there, but he really, I think the journey kind of took a lot out of him. But he even joked there, like, and was so with it. Like, that was the sad thing, because we were like, you know what's going on, do you know? And like, But he was there for a night and the next day. And I remember like everyone was coming to see him. And he was like, we were like, should we have this many people inside in a hospice? And he was like, let whoever wants to come, come. Like, it doesn't matter. And the nurses said the same. They were amazing. Milford Hospice is, I don't have words for them. They were just so amazing. But like, so people were coming and I remember I was trying to feed him because he loved food. And the first thing he looked for when he went down, there was food, but he couldn't eat it. And I remember the nurse called me and Marie out. Brian had been gone down home to do fix up the yard or whatever. And like my aunt and niece, and there was loads of people there with him. And they were like, look, basically it's come to the time where you don't need to worry now. Don't worry about feeding him. Don't worry about giving him water. He just needs the medicines we're giving him. And we were like, so it's definitely happening. And I was like, when were you going to click this? Or like, you're in a hospice, like.
I know.
But you just, you don't. You hold on. And like when they're there with you,
yeah,
you know. And so they were so lovely in how they said it. And I was like, look, my boyfriend is in Abu Dhabi. Should I call him? And he was like, yes. And he was like, wouldn't you rather him be here and meet him when he's still alive? You know, well, he'd already met him during the summer, but, you know, meet him for the last moments or whatever. So I did. And in fairness, Rohan got on a plane straight away. But when we went back into the room, he was still conscious. He was like, where were you? He was like, where was Marie? And I was like, oh, no, we were just talking to the nurse. He was like, don't ever leave me like that again. I want you or Marie or Brian to be here with me all the time. So it was always one of us inside there after that. And I was like, but look, like his two sisters were there. And he said, no, I want you and Marie and Brian, one of the two or one of the three of you to be in here. So I was like, okay. So those few days were actually lovely and people came and like, one night, I think there was about 15 people inside there. There was a lot of people inside there and everyone was talking and laughing and we were playing music and I was like, this is now what he'd love. And he used to do this thing. He was obviously unconscious then. And but we brought Theo in, his grandchild. And we just wanted him to see him one more time. He was only a little baby. And the last time he opened his eyes was to see him. And I said, Dad, are you happy now? And he said, yeah. And then he just closed his eyes, but he was still conscious for another day or two. And I think that was one of the best things we could have done because he loved that child so much. You know, even Theo's name is Theo Noel Clancy and he just adored him. So to be able to give that to him was a real, you know, and then that was kind of it for the next few days. It was just very peaceful. And then we... you don't really get a 10-minute warning or anything. So he used to do this thing where he would just move his eyebrows. So if you said something, you're like, Dad, would you like to listen to McFlavin? He'd eventually raise his eyebrows. So when Rohan came over, we weren't engaged at this point, and he was like, I want to ask your dad. So the two of us stayed in the room and he said, you know, because they had met and Dad loved him and was like, does he respect you? Does he treat you well? And I was like, yeah. And he said, that's all I care about. So he adored him. And he just said, you know, like, I'd really like to marry your daughter if that'd be okay. And sure, obviously I was in a hula hoop crying and I didn't look at Dad and I hadn't told Rohan anything. He was like, well, he's after moving his eyebrows. And I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, is that? And I said, oh, that means he approves then, because that's how he kind of is communicating with us. So we all had our like moments with him, but you're never ready for the final one. But all five of us were there. Breitha had to, my brother's wife had to bring the baby back, obviously, to Galway, back home. He couldn't stay in a hospital for the night. So me and my brother and sister and Rohan and Grod were all there when he passed. And I just cuddled into him and Brian was at the other side and Marie was there. And it was the nicest send off we could give him, because I think all he wanted was his family around him. And then the shitstorm happens then after that when you're trying to deal with the other stuff. So, but it was, I just struggle with it because whatever about me, I just get so upset for him. That he had such a, that's how it ended for him. Do you know, like, I wish he had a bit more time with Theo and a bit more time like getting to know, you know, my husband now. And, you know, it just, everything was kind of just cut short, and he deserved better than that. But he still, like, I'll always look up to him at, like, he must have, I know he felt awful, and he still could smile and joke and give us advice and pull us all together. Like, the fact that he could have done that, and everything he was physically going through and mentally, like, I don't know how he stayed so strong, but, you know, it's just, you'd be very proud of him.
Did he speak about your mom in those last days or anything?
Yeah. Like, I remember, I don't know what point, but it must have been closer to the end, but he was like, I just miss Christina so much. And, you know, as much as I don't think he wanted to leave us, I think he was really ready to be with her. You know, especially when your body's struggling, and he had done whatever, like 18 years without her. And I hope, like, I'm not very, I'd be quite spiritual. I do believe in heaven and all of that. I don't expect anyone else to, but I would hope that at least he knew if he was leaving us, at least he was going to her, you know, and his sisters and his mom and dad and the little baby that they lost. Like, there was a lot for him to go towards, I suppose, as well. Mm. It just sucks for the people left behind, because he left a massive gap. Like, he, like, especially in my life, because I spent so much time with him, and he, you know, he was my two parents for so long and helped me through so much, because, you know, teenagers are brats sometimes. And he just stuck it out with me. And he was just a great man. And he's really missed by a lot of people. And, like, people even still talk, I still have people talking to me about my mom. And I'm like, what a privilege it is to have these two amazing people that people still talk about. But it just doesn't make the grief side of things any easier. And I think, like, that's one thing I didn't get to speak to you about before, is, like, you know, all of that, of course, it's awful and you go through it and it's sad, but it's all the bits afterwards. It's like, people, like, mommy's gone 22 years in December, and I still carry that with me. Not, I don't think in an unhealthy way, but like, I can think of her really happily, but I still miss my mom. Like, yesterday we went out for, like, a school lunch or whatever, and there was adults there talking about their mothers. And I was like, I'm not a mother myself, and my mother isn't here. So I was like, I actually, not that I can't contribute to the conversation, but you're talking about getting advice from your mothers, or, like, going out doing stuff with your moms. I actually can't take part in that conversation. And usually I'm fine with it, but some days it just hits you like a ton of bricks. Or, like, somebody says something to you, and it's like, oh, and how's your dad doing? It's like, yeah, no, he's actually passed away too. And it's like, you know, it's just, it's a lot. It's a lot to take on. And I suppose, you know, they both were gone by the time I was 29. It's just, it's a lot then to face into the rest of your life without that advice and, you know, that structure and support, because they were such a good support, always. Like, they were the best parents. And I have the best aunts and uncles. Like, I have to say that, because, like, I can ring them for anything and I love them so much, but they're not my mom and dad, do you know? And I think, like, sometimes I try to play my grief down, because, you know, you've heard some horrific circumstances of how people have died, or little babies, or, you know, like, really, really awful things. But I suppose the thing I'm trying to get clear in my head is, like, of course the circumstances can be awful, and mine weren't too great. I'd rather not be there if somebody passes away, although I'm grateful I was. But it's what comes after is, like, I don't think anyone should compare their grief with anyone else's, because everyone's is their own. And, like, how I feel some days might be completely different to you. And, you know, no grief is worse than another, I think. you know, and I think that's just really important to, for people to understand, because I know my, like, I've heard it from people's conversations, like, should that happen a year ago? Would you think they're all right now? Are they still struggling with that? And it's like, well, have you been through it? Like, you really do have to go through something, you know, to understand, especially a death. Of course, there's grief in breakups and loads of different things, but a death is so final and so scary. It's a really scary place to be. And I just think people need to be so much gentler with each other, especially people who are like, both people or whoever, they're all grieving. It's like, well, you know what it's like. So just be gentle and be kind. Do you know? It's, it's a hard one.
I love what you're saying about that, because I'm in this world of grief for so long now.
Yeah.
But even still, there are times I try my hardest. If I'm around someone who's lost a husband, I will not talk about my husband.
Yeah.
Which isn't right. It depends. You know, if you're around them a lot, then of course you're going to. But I do try to. If I'm around someone who has, you know, miscarried, I try not to, or, you know, or if they're struggling, I don't go on and on and on about my kids, you know?
Yeah.
I'm a bit more mindful. Even still, even with the best intuition or awareness in the world, I could still be there in that conversation and you just forget that the person beside you cannot contribute. And it's so often that happens.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's a two-sided coin as well, because there's so many things in life. You know, if someone's divorced, they can't contribute to a conversation about marriage. If someone's not a mom, they can't. You know what I mean? All those kind of things.
Yeah.
It's hard, but I would err on side of caution that I do feel strongly as well that people need to be a little bit more mindful.
Yeah. Well, I don't, like, I would be so upset if nobody mentioned their parents.
For sure.
That's not really, it's inside me. And also sometimes I feel with, if somebody has lost a husband or, and I've lost my parents, what I'm saying is for people like that, don't compare, because my grief isn't worse than your grief. And we've both lost somebody we really, really love. Totally different circumstances. You were without a partner. And I can say that because I see with my dad, he didn't have his partner, but I didn't have my mom. We lost the same person, but completely different.
Mm.
And I think that's just taught me to be like, well, you know what? He's allowed to be upset and cross that he's lost his wife and give out about it. And you can do the same. That's more what I mean, is that, like, your I don't mean your grief isn't worse, because of course there are situations that are more challenging and a bit harder. But
I guess every time you meet somebody, they have what you don't have.
Yeah.
Like, so you've, you have your sister, I don't.
Yeah.
I have my mom, you don't.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think there's so many people walking around that, you know, it's so different. And exactly that, to not compare, but you have your own thing. Everyone has their own thing. It's,
and it mightn't even be a death. It could be something else in their life that they're struggling with.
Yeah.
And that's what they're finding really hard. And I just think, just less judgment and just be a bit sounder. Like, just be kinder to people, because you don't know what kind of day they've had or what news they've got, or did they just hear a song that made them think of something. I ran out of a shop in Abu Dhabi because I saw sandwich spread. Sandwich spread, it's disgusting. But I saw it, and it was literally after I'd moved back, and I was like, I dropped everything and ran, and I was like, over sandwich spread. And I rang Marie and she's like, what did you see? And I was like, Heinz sandwich spread. And she's like, oh yeah, that got me there last week too.
Is
like,
that your dad?
He used to have it on sandwiches. And it's just, it's such a, it's always, always in our house. And we saw it over in Abu Dhabi in a shop. Like you. But, you know, like, you just never know. And I just think,
for sure,
you know, you just, and I know there's all the different stages and it's not linear. Like, I've had a bit of a tough week with, probably, well, I only found out about this yesterday, but it has been on my mind. And next week I could be totally fine.
Yeah.
And I just think, give people a bit of grace and a little bit of, you know, it doesn't give you permission to act, you know, me to act unkindly to somebody, but just, you know, I can control my emotions when I can.
Just awareness.
Just awareness and just to be aware that everyone is carrying something.
Would you be able to, I suppose, give me a bit of insight into what it's now like as an adult with no parents to feel, I imagine, look, there's people here that don't even get on with their parents, you know?
Yeah,
but there's a sense of home, as in that lovely song, home is wherever I'm with you. Like your home is kind of, it's where do you go when Christmas happens, you know? It's that base.
Yeah.
And as I said, there's so many people that have broken relationships and whatnot, different circumstances. But for someone who had a great relationship with their parents to now be in the world without them, and that safety. There's a lovely quote I've put on the page a couple of times saying the loss of a mom, I think I said, but a parent is an incalculable blow that no one could ever replace.
No.
What does it feel like to be so young with no parents here?
Like, it's scary. And like, I have a really good husband and a good family and everyone else around me. Like, but again, it's not the same. And like, my dad was the first person I'd ring if there was something wrong or if I had a question about anything, even if it was about what you think about these flight tickets. He hadn't a clue, but he'd always be the first person I would ring. And sometimes I feel like there are people I can ring, but I don't want to be bothering them too much, even though I know it's not a bother, but I don't want that. I also moved home and moved into our family home. So that's myself and Rohan's house now. And I was very conscious to not keep it as it was because, well, number one, it needed to be updated, like practical things. But number two, I didn't want it to be a shrine to mom and dad because that is not healthy. And the amount of people that have come and are like, oh my God, it's still, it's an old house. It's a schoolhouse, like, and it's old. Unless we rip it down and put it up again, it's still going to look the same, but we've put our own little touch on it. And I'm really proud of that. But I still, it's weird. It's not like the home I grew up in, but I still very much feel them around, which is quite nice. And my friend stayed there when we were gone and she had never met them, doesn't really know much about my mom and dad. And she was like, I could feel your parents here. It was lovely. It's like every room I went into, there was like a different story. And she'd never been there before. So at the start, that was hard because it was like, oh no, we can't do that. And I was like, no, we're out. We need to. Otherwise, it's not going to work living here. So that sense of home, I guess, is nice because at least I know my brother and sister can still come home to their house, even though it's not home anymore, but it's still there. But it's just quite hard because they were my rocks. And I'm so lucky that I can say that because I know I have friends who don't get on as well with their parents. But I guess I feel like, and it sounds negative, and I don't like to say this really because it puts a negative spin on it, but I do feel like I was robbed of a mother. And as I was coming into my own then and like really looking forward to having my dad and moving home and like having him healthy, then he was gone. So what's hardest for me is like my whole outlook on what I thought life was going to be is just completely gone now. And while that's, I don't mean, you know, like, oh, I have a whole blank slate. Yeah, that's really exciting, but at the cost of not having my parents. Like people have said to me, and it's not from a bad place at all, and I know it's not, but on three occasions in the last couple of months, it's been, aren't you very lucky now you got the free house?
Oh,
geez. And I was like, a free house?
Oh my God.
I was like, I know what you're saying in this climate. Of course, I'm so lucky to not have a mortgage, but I'd much rather have my parents and pay a mortgage like the rest of my friends. And like, you know, I'm very careful that I don't snap because I actually just want to tear the heads off them. But I'm like, well, I'd rather have mom and dad there now than the free house. And they're like, oh, no, of course, of course. And I'm like, again, just be careful what you say.
Yeah.
It's like, which would I rather, this or that?
That's wild. So, it's like if you know, if a car was left behind.
Yeah.
And someone says, it's great that you got the car.
Yeah.
Like,
isn't it brilliant?
It's crazy.
It's so crazy. And I know it's not what they mean, but I'm like, but you understand how that sounds. Yeah, and I do feel like I need to correct them because I'm like, but at this cost. So it is a little bit scary because, you know, it turns your life upside down. We got married since, and that was hard, even though it was the hands down best day of my life. And I was very, very aware to not make it all about mom and dad and the fact that they weren't there. Because I was like, no, it's also a happy, joyous day in our family because we've been through a lot in the last couple of years. And, you know, we had a candle for them and I mentioned them in the speeches, but that was it then. And I was very...
And you wore your mom's dress?
I wore it the second day. I actually wanted to wear it for gorgeous. The wedding.
Yeah.
But then I found another one. I was like, oh my God, it looks so girly. So I'm going to wear this. But we...
That is so lovely though. It's a lovely tribute.
So fab. And yeah. I remember always trying it on for dad and he'd get upset and he's like, you're just like her. And I was like, well, that's a compliment in itself.
Aww.
But that was hard because... So many other people miss them. And so many people are like, oh, isn't it awful knowing Christine aren't here? And I said, it is. But it's also a happy day.
Yeah.
And I did find it hard, but it's not funny, but it is funny. So Rohan's parents were there. So for the pictures, there was Rohan's parents, Rohan and me. And Mammy was the same on her wedding day because she didn't, her parents had both passed by the time she got married. And I remember somebody said like, oh, do you want people to stand in? And I was like, no. Because they're not my parents. And they did it in a really loving way.
Of course,
you know.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, because they're not there. And I don't think it looked like, God, there's nobody there on her side. I was like, leave a space for them because they are here. And I was trying to be really positive on the day like that because I think I earned a happy day of like joy and happiness and celebration of them. Mm. I think they deserved that as well because we've spent so long being sad in them. And we'll be sad about them again. But they were really included nicely in the day, I think. But again, that was hard because, you know, it's like, you know, and I know certain people found it hard watching, like, my brother walk me down the aisle and having no dad there or mom to walk me down. And I know he was a bit emotional doing it. And I'm so grateful to him that he did. And my sister couldn't have done more to make the whole... like wedding. I was like, it's grand, everything'll be fine. She's like, no, we need to do this. Like she couldn't have, the two of them couldn't have been more supportive at such a hard time because there was dips when I was like, I don't want to do any of this. And they were just brilliant. But stuff like real life stuff is hard. Like celebrations are hard because
I get that.
You feel like there's people missing like important, really like yourself, like not
there,
having.
There was people crying the morning of my wedding and they weren't crying because, oh, she looks beautiful. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
there
know.
Is an element. I'm like, okay, stop crying about Elaine Pat, please. You know what I mean? As you said, we'll be crying about it next week. Can we not have a moment?
Yeah, cry about me and how gorgeous I am.
But honestly, those people looking at me, you know, with tears of sadness. Is
I know,
you're like, okay.
Cool.
No, but I get it. Yeah. I get it at the same time. I mean, I would be the same watching someone. Because you do. You're like, it's so obvious.
Yeah.
For people looking, you see that gap in the photo.
Who's missing, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think with them, it was just very evident mom and dad were not there.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know? But everyone had a great time.
You get
time.
Through it and you have
a
great
do.
Time.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you're living there in the house now. And I suppose it's nice to hear you, you know, even speak about that. As you were talking there, I was thinking about the fact it's 22 years. It's just so irrelevant, I think.
Yeah.
How much time has passed? It's always, that pain is there.
Yeah.
Like that loss is always felt. And that's the thing I've learned over the years here, is the loss is always there. And I don't think anyone should ever start apologizing that like, well, you know, it is 30 years. Like,
I know.
It doesn't matter. What does that matter?
Well, if it's your person and your... whoever, like I know everyone's different, but like I'll never not think of her in a happy and sad way.
Bittersweet.
Yeah. Mm. And same with dad. Like, and I'll never not think about them and I'll never not talk about them. Like that's one thing I've gotten really comfortable with, like talking about my mom and dad. And like it's even come up in a new job I had and it came up about mom and they were like, said something about dad and I said he passed away. And I was like, God. And I'm like, it's okay. And I wouldn't mention it in work if I wasn't okay talking about it. And I can talk about them because they were still my parents and I can be involved in, I know I'm kind of contradicting myself. It depends on the day as well. But, you know, I will always, always talk about them and with love because they were great people and they were so flippin' funny and they did so much for us. And I think when you don't talk about them, it gets lost a bit. Whereas we talk about them as if they're still not with us, but like it's only recently that they passed. Do you know that kind of way?
I think it's nice when I think about it now, like how present in a way, you know, when you do put the time on it, which to me is just irrelevant. But
yeah,
when you put that number 22 years, and yet, you know, I wonder what your mom would think that we're here and that we're talking so much about her and about her wedding dress, about losing her parents, about your dad. They still live on. Mm. You know, they're always remembered. And I think that's a nice thing.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you know.
And I think they deserve it, do you know?
Yeah.
Because again, like, I think what I said at the start, what gets me the most is what happened to them, I think, is so unfair. Of course, for us left behind it is, but like, Mammy was so way too young and just gone, didn't get to say goodbye to anybody. Then Dad living through this hell while still being so positive and knowing what was coming. Like that, it's just so, there's no fair way for anyone to go up, but I'm just talking about like my situation. And it's just, I just feel bad for them, but I want to make sure that they, you know, they did have great lives as well and they made the most of them. So I feel like, do you know, like you were saying, how am I now? I kind of feel like I owe it to them to live a really good life and like to do the things I want to do and not listen to the noise and stuff like that. Because do you know what? The shittiest thing has happened and, you know.
Well, thank you so much for coming and telling me all about Noel and Christina. It was lovely to hear about them. And I think that you're doing a great job in the way you grieve. I think you brought an awful lot of wisdom today and experience, actually. You know, there's so many people that's 13 now or has a 13-year-old child and the dad has died and they're worried about them. Yeah. And your perspective is really important. And just thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for talking. Thank you.